The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is July 4th. Woohoo! I guess.
What a way to celebrate.
yeah. I feel like not going to get into politics, but like everyone just feels weird like celebrating July 4th lately because just like there's so much turmoil during an election year. Election years are the worst. It's so like stressful and everybody just wants to like be like me. And I'm like,
It's such a process for you guys. Like, I know obviously we're not going to get political, but it's just interesting the difference in the election years. Like, for us, the election kind of campaign goes for 2 weeks and that's it. Whereas I know with you guys, it goes forever.
It just never ends. It never ends, but it's just much worse during election years.
It's much more amplified.
Yeah, I try to avoid it as much as I can, but it's hard. But anyway, so if you hear any fireworks going off in the background, that's why, because I have heard a few, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if this is a thing for you in Australia ever. For some reason, around July 4th, or even just in the summer in general, there's always like random fireworks going off at night, and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why are in fireworks? I think fireworks are cool when you go to a fireworks show, and I get when you have kids, but I don't understand people who are like obsessed with fireworks, and I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone.
Especially your own like little, not homemade, but like the ones that you just let off at your house,
because
they're always a shit. Like, you know, I'm like, what's the point? And it just disturbs all the animals. They look ridiculous. It makes you look like an idiot.
Yeah. I just, around here, because you can't, I don't know how it is, but in New York, I'm pretty sure you can't buy the ones that like shoot up into the sky, really. So people will go to like different states to get all these crazy fireworks where they're less restricted. And like they'll post pictures of like their car packed with like
probably
like $1,000 of fireworks and stuff as like a brag. And I'm like, no one fucking cares. Like,
it's the same here. Like, I think we're in New South Wales where I live. I'm pretty sure they're still illegal. They were illegal. I'm sure most of them still are. But you can drive to Canberra, which is actually a state, it's a territory, but it's like a little kind of landlocked separate territory within this state. So you can just drive there and get them if you're really that desperate.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like an ego thing. And I'm like, man, I wish that this is like all I had to care about was how many fucking fireworks I could get.
It's funny. Well, it's interesting here because most of the fireworks here are New Year's Eve and like sometimes Australia Day, but they're both in summer for us. So a lot of the time anyway, you can't have them because there's like a fire ban. But people do it anyway. But yeah. It's exactly the same here. It happens exactly the same scenario.
It's just like always that one annoying dude. It's always men. It's never women. I've never seen a woman post about I've never seen a woman post about like, whoa, look at all my explosives and fireworks that I got. So sorry, men. That's funny though. But anyway, so I've had off today for the 4th and I'm off tomorrow, which is nice. So 4-day weekend for me. But I was like trying to do all these productive things today, and I have a Ninja Creami, which is like an ice cream maker. And my mom got it for me for Christmas last year, and I haven't been able to use it too much because my apartment was super small. So I just didn't really have the space to put it out, and then moving and it was packed away. So I've used it once before at my apartment to just test it out, and it was fine. I followed all the directions and I did it, and started smelling like it was like burning, you know, like machine.
Yeah, like burning, the mechanical smell. Burning smell. Yeah.
So I was like, that's, and it is super loud because it's essentially like a blade that's propellering
whipping
into ice. So I was like, that's kind of weird. Maybe just like because I haven't used it for a while. So I like it kept going. I did the first one. And you have to like spin it a couple times, and if you add like mix-ins and toppings and stuff to go in. So I did that. And then when I did the second one, it started smelling more. And then I was like, I can't tell if it's smoking a little, but it's getting pretty hot and I'm a little nervous. So I turned it off and I started looking And it's happened to other people too, where they're like, oh my God, my thing caught on fire. Like,
oh my
it started
God.
Burning and smoking, melting. And I'm so lucky that I put it on a cutting board, because like all this black stuff got all over. It was like soot almost. It was weird. So I was reading about it, and some people said that it could be because if it's like super frozen, basically the machine's overworking and it's working too hard if it's really frozen solid. So you should like leave it out for a little. Like, it doesn't say that in the directions. So I guess I'll try that. But then some people were like, oh, like I contacted Ninja and they gave me a replacement one. So I'm like, I don't know. Should I contact them? Should I try it again and see what happens?
I would contact them. It's so weird that like a machine that is made to basically work with ice can't handle it.
Yeah. I mean, some people said because it was very solid, this one. So I don't know if I left it out for – I'm going to try again because I still have to finish adding like the mix-ins, like little chocolate chips and stuff to one that I wanted in it. And I'll see how that goes. And then maybe I'll contact them. But anyways, I want to tell a story because I was wondering if this happened to anyone else or if anyone else has a Ninja Creamy and what happened. Did you contact them? Did you get a new one? Because I didn't get it like super recently. My mom got it for me for Christmas. I just haven't really used it much. It's really only my second time using it. So I don't know if they're going to care and be like, well, it's been,
well, no,
it hasn't even been a year.
Absolutely still be under warranty or like,
it's not cheap.
Purpose.
Some of them, they're like $200 to $300.
It's crazy. It's so random because on Facebook when I'm scrolling, it shows me all these like Ninja Creamy groups and I'm like, I don't have one. Why are you showing me this?
I wonder if it's because like, when did that happen? Because like I joined one a couple days ago and I wonder if it's because like we're friends and I joined one. So now it's like, oh, maybe she's also into them.
But it's like, it's funny because when you're talking, I don't have the machine, but now I know because like I see these people like, and I've seen people use those protein shakes as well. It's like I did the protein shake and I added coffee and I added this and this and this. And I'm like, wow, it's like, it sounds good. I'm not buying one because I do not want another appliance in my house. But
yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. What's going on with you?
In terms of all my car dramas, so I was scrolling Facebook again. I seem to do a lot of that this episode, but and I saw someone posted that they got a quote from the dealership where I bought my car for like some type of maintenance or service, and basically it was $1,500. And then they took it to some other mechanic who charged them half the price. They're like, "Stay away from this dealer." And I'm like, "I could have told you that."
Yeah, it's just sad that that's what you have to do with everything. Because even my mom's always like, "Oh, have some people like for whatever services, get some quotes." And I'm like, "That's just so much effort." That like I don't want to do that, but like you have to because people have tried to fucking rip you off.
Yeah,
it's exhausting. So yeah, that's that. I guess let's get to the topics, the subjects, before we go on and on. So we've got one update to talk about today. I mean, by the time this comes out, it isn't really the newest of news anymore, but it still is big news.
Happened since our last episode anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one that a lot of people have been following, been posting about. So Karen Reed trial has ended in a mistrial. On Monday, a judge declared a mistrial. And we did an episode for this case in May 2023. So if you don't know the whole story and want to get in on it, we have that episode. And that's everything up to the trial, which I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that's all you really need to know. And then you could just read about the trial.
Yeah, the trial was messy as well. So that our episode, like our, that episode is one of our most popular episodes too. So like it is
because
an interesting case and an interesting story. So yeah, I would recommend going to check it out if you haven't. And it kind of is less messy than what happened after.
Yeah. So I mean, the quick summary is that Karen was charged with the murder of her boyfriend, John O'Keefe, after she dropped him off at a party on January 29th, 2002. So the next morning after the party.
2022. You said 2002.
I always do that. January 29th, 2022. So the next morning after the party, his body was found like outside of the house in the snow, dead. And it was alleged that Karen hit him with her vehicle because she was also driving after having a few drinks. But it just doesn't seem likely. There's a lot of very strange things. The house party that he was at had some Boston police officers, so it's a big
police cover-up. Or
a lot of people think it could be a police cover-up because people in the house were googling like how long does it take to die of hypothermia, and his body would have been pretty far away and she would have had to hit him at a pretty high speed, whereas they're trying to say like when she was backing up she accidentally hit him. So just a lot of things that like don't make sense, which is why I'm surprised it ended in a mistrial, because whether you think she's guilty or innocent, there's so much reasonable doubt regardless. Yeah.
Even I did a poll on Instagram and I didn't even include, like, and I asked people what they thought was going to be the outcome. Like, would she be found innocent and, oh, sorry, not guilty, or, you know, like, or there was basically four options in a poll and I didn't put mistrial because I thought there's no way this is going to be a mistrial. Like, everyone was messaging saying she's 100% not, she's going to get off because it's just not enough to convict her, even if she is guilty. And then, mm-hmm. I was wrong. It was a mistrial.
Yeah, they haven't said the split that I've seen, but it just seems like maybe there was like one or two people that were like absolutely not changing their minds.
Yeah.
Jurors at the Superior Court deliberated for 5 days before they sent a note to the judge that they remain deeply divided by fundamental differences in our opinions and state of mind, and that they had reached a point where consensus is unattainable. So this happened like twice, and the judge sent them back each time and basically told them to try harder because they left early a few days, and the judge was like, come on, we don't want to do this again.
They basically set their own hours. They're like, I need to leave early today. And yeah, like it was.
And they're like, July 4th is coming up, but we got to go.
That's why we're like, this is absolutely going to be over this week because they're not going to want to be there for July 4th.
Yeah. So the judge tried to send them back multiple times to get them to come to a decision, but that didn't happen. So eventually it was declared a mistrial. We won't go into the whole trial because, like we said, a lot went on and it's just something that we couldn't go over briefly. Maybe we'll do an episode when everything's over. But like I said, I suggest just listening to our first episode. But there was one kind of crazy thing from the trial that we want to talk about. So Massachusetts State Police Trooper Michael Proctor, he admitted to calling Karen a whack job. Like, this basically all came out because of the investigation and stuff, because it's like the defense is kind of trying to be like there's a cover-up going on here, so it went into the police a bit more. So basically he called Karen a whack job. He was telling colleagues that he didn't find any nudes on her phone while it was being searched for evidence, and he messaged his sister saying that he wished Karen would kill herself. And so he apologized on the stand for his unprofessional comments. It's like, fuck you, dude. That's crazy. That is crazy.
This is someone who's meant to be, you know, in not, you know, like assisting with this case. And these are the kind of comments that he's making.
Yeah, like dealing with a serious case and you're like looking for nudes on her phone. Disgusting. Makes me annoyed. So anyways, after the mistrial, he was relieved of his duties, so karma. The interim superintendent of the Massachusetts State Police wrote in a statement, upon learning today's result, the department took immediate action to relieve Trooper Michael Proctor of duty and formally transfer him out of the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office State Police Detectives Unit.
It's a very long time. It's a lot.
Since this follows our previous decision to open an internal affairs investigation after information about serious misconduct emerged in testimony at the trial. So, good.
So, after the mistrial, we had a few messages from people asking what happens now, what are kind of the next steps in the case. So, prosecutors announced on the day that they do intend to retry the case, which a lot of people were surprised about that. They're like, this is ridiculous. Why is this happening again? But they have announced that they plan to do that. A hearing has been set for July 22. And if the retrial is ordered, it must be held within a year of that hearing date. Dan Conley, who's a former district attorney, spoke about the possible retrial. He did say there is a chance prosecutors may change their mind, especially in regards to the charges they may bring against Karen. During that first trial, she'd been charged with second-degree murder, manslaughter while operating a vehicle under the influence, and leaving the scene of an accident causing an injury or death. So the former DA said a lot of that's going to play out in the next several months. So it may, if it does go back to trial, it may be different in terms of what, you know, what she's up for. A law professor at Northeastern University, Daniel Medwed, said mistrials are pretty rare and it's natural for the prosecution to vow to retry them, especially if they feel as though justice wasn't served. He said, once some of the emotions recede and time passes, then the key issue is they'll look in the mirror and say, is this a wise use of our resources? What could we do differently to secure a conviction? And do we honestly think the results next time will be different? So I feel like a lot of people are still doubting that it will go to retrial, but I guess after July 22, we will know more.
I feel like
on what the hearing is,
it'd be such a waste, because it's either the most likely scenarios are either that she's gonna get not guilty or it's gonna be a mistrial again. Like, it's not likely to go in the prosecution's favor. Just, and plus, like, this case caused so much chaos, so much craziness. Yeah. It probably cost them a lot of money. I just feel like it'd be such a waste of time, money, energy for a similar outcome.
I wonder, like, I do agree that I feel like maybe they will revise the charges that they bring against her in maybe, like, it's just like, you know, that old saying to basically keep doing the same thing and expect a different result is insanity. So maybe they will revise the charges.
But I still feel like even if they change the charges, like, they still, there's still so much reasonable doubt regardless of what the charge is, because it's basically, is she being framed or did she do it? So, like, I feel like the charge doesn't even really matter, because whether she hit him by accident or hit him on purpose or whatever, it doesn't, like, make a difference.
Yeah.
So we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, be interesting.
That's all for updates, really. Today we're going to talk about the case of Wade Wilson, which has been going around online a lot recently. I don't know if it's because of his interesting face tattoos or I guess he has some interesting courtroom demeanor that has been going around on TikTok and Instagram. But it is a pretty crazy case, actually. So we're going to get into that one.
This home behind me was Wade Wilson's last stop before his arrest. But Cape Coral Police Department is trying to piece together Wilson's whereabouts between 10 and 11 a.m. Monday morning.
You know, up until a couple days ago, it's been pretty quiet. But
Bill Morgan lives next door to where 25-year-old Wade Wilson was arrested for burglary on Monday night. According to the report, earlier in the day, Wilson ran from police after admitting to stabbing someone. KPD searching for him most of the day. I went into multiple businesses along Hancock Bridge Parkway trying to figure out where Wilson went. Some businesses tell me Wilson was found trespassing in the area. The owner of a liquor store up the road says his sons have seen Wilson purchase alcohol there Friday and Saturday nights. The homeowners where Wilson was arrested were out of town, this arrest putting neighbors on alert.
You know, you kind of think that you're always protected and everything is going to be fine. And when all of a sudden it happens next door, you know, you start saying, you know, by the grace of God, that could have been our house. So it's pretty scary.
Wilson is still in custody for burglary and battery charges. A judge ordered him held without bail.
So Wade Wilson is 30 years old, and he has recently been convicted of the murders of two women in Florida in 2019. Their names are Christine Melton and Diane Ruiz. I don't know why this happened in 2019 and, like, this is just happening now.
And especially because it seems like it was a very cut and dried case, like, just not getting ahead. But his attorney even said he committed the crimes. It was kind of under what circumstances he committed them. So, like, that's a long time to go to trial based on how long ago it happened.
Yeah. So he is currently awaiting sentencing and he could receive the death penalty. So we'll start off with some brief background into the victims before you get into the crime. The first victim is Christine Melton. She was 35 years old. It said that she loved her cats and that she was a great friend. She moved to Cape Coral, Florida with her friend Stephanie Saylor, and both of them worked as servers in the same restaurant. That'll come back because Stephanie is the one to give a lot of the story, really. Christine's cousin Samantha said she made everyone feel safe and understood. And Christine always wanted to have children, and Samantha, through tears, said Christine will never experience motherhood, a role that she was born to play. And the second victim is Diane Ruiz. She was 43, and she was the mother of two sons named Brandon, who's 29, and Zane, who's 19. Zane said his mother's death happened days before his debut in the high school marching band, which she was really looking forward to seeing. And he's quoted as saying, I never got to see her in the crowd. My mom will never see me get married, which is really sad. Diane worked in a bar and her coworker said that she was reliable. She hadn't missed a shift in 5 years. And her coworker, Linda, said Diane was the heartbeat of the bar. She always had everybody's back. She just had that personality that was really magnifying. She has this really loud laugh that you could hear it like a mile away. So that's a little bit about them. Seemed like they were nice ladies. So Wade, a bit about him. His full name is Wade Steven Wilson, and he was born May 20th, 1994. For anyone who is a Marvel fan, you will know that Wade Wilson is the alter ego of Deadpool. We don't know if he chose this. We think this is his birth name, and it's just a coincidence, because we haven't found anything about him changing his name to that. But we thought it could be interesting based on the tattoos that he has, because a quote says, Deadpool, who's played by Ryan Reynolds in the movies, had cancer. His cancer cells regenerate as fast as his normal cells, leaving his body heavily scarred, and the reason he wears a full face mask, because we were saying Wade Wilson, the real person, has a lot of tattoos on his face now, kind of like Joker-esque tattoos, like stitches from his mouth and swastika on his face, and just a lot going on.
So Wade is referred to in the media sometimes as the Deadpool killer, and he's also referred to as the Cape Coral serial strangler or Cape Coral strangler. So if you have read about those kind of monikers, they are both.
It's so weird because I feel like he really doesn't need like a nickname.
Yeah. I feel like he's just like, he's a real character just because of how he looks. So they're kind of playing up to it. But
yeah, sensationalizing for clicks. So in 2019, his violent tendencies were escalating rapidly. And this information is from a court document from July 2019 regarding his ex named Melissa Montanez. So, I mean, it's very long and like police report wording. So I'll just go through the parts that aren't just like redundant information. Basically, it says that they were called to an address in Florida for an assault that occurred. It says Deputy Castro made contact with victim Melissa Montanez. Victim stated to Deputy Castro that she had been in a sexual relationship with her boyfriend, Wade Wilson. And within the last 2 weeks, the victim disclosed that Wilson has physically battered her on several occasions. In one of those incidents, the victim attempted to flee from Wilson, but was caught after Wilson ran after her. Wilson then choked her to the point of unconsciousness, where he then tied her hands behind her back and placed her in a vehicle. Wilson then drove her back to their residence. And once they got to the residence, Wilson placed the victim into a boat and placed his penis into her anus without the victim's consent. This is just like more insight to their relationship, which I think is important because it shows more about him being a shitty person. So it says the victim told the detective that she's been dating Wilson for approximately 15 days and they've been living together almost the entire time. Before they moved, they were renting hotel rooms around the country, around the county. I was like, around the country, Jesus.
Where are they going?
The victim informed the detective that her memory of events is not the best due to her consuming a lot of Jack Daniels over the last 2 weeks. During the course of their relationship, the victim and Wilson typically engaged in consensual sex acts multiple times a day, consisting of oral, vaginal, and anal intercourse. Approximately 12 days ago, in parentheses, the victim does not remember exact dates. The victim stated that Wilson became upset over a text message on her phone. The victim stated that Wilson grabbed her by the neck and choked her to the point where she was in and out of consciousness. When the victim regained consciousness, she attempted to run away but was unsuccessful. So Wilson observed another text message on her phone, to which he again became angry and began to choke her during this incident. The victim is unsure if she lost consciousness or if she only pretended to lose consciousness to thwart any further abuse. On approximately June 23rd, 2019, the victim and Wilson were in a vehicle where he became upset over text messages. The victim decided to attempt to flee because she didn't want to be harmed by him. Wilson grabbed her skirt as she attempted to exit the vehicle and pulled it off her. The victim stated that she ran a short distance seeking help with only a shirt on due to her not wearing underwear on this day. He caught up to her and choked her until she passed out. Wilson then tied the victim up with a form of cord binding her hands behind her back. He attempted to tie her feet and she began to kick and cry, at which point he stopped trying to tie up her feet. Wilson placed the victim into the vehicle and drove her back to the residence. The victim couldn't remember how she was positioned in the vehicle, but believed she was in the front seat with her head towards his lap. She said she was blindfolded during the incident by an unknown object and she couldn't see through it. She was taken to a boat that was located at the dock at the back of the property, where he pushed her onto the boat. Wilson then told the victim that he was teaching her a lesson and began to penetrate her anus with his penis. The victim does not recall if Wilson used a condom, but doesn't believe so because they had not used one up to this point. After this was over, Wilson took the victim back to the car and told her that the pain was over. On June 30th, 2019, Wilson began to get angry with the victim again. The victim, being in fear of Wilson, exited the vehicle and fled on foot. Wilson chased the victim in the vehicle and attempted to cut her off, but the victim managed to evade Wilson and place a call to one of her friends to come get her. The victim said that she has had consensual sex with Wilson since the incident where he sexually battered her. The victim also said all the sexual intercourse that they had was consensual, other than the one time on the boat where he forced his penis into her anus. And then it just goes on to state some of her injuries, that they observed several bruises to her body consistent with a physical struggle. So she had bruising like on her shoulder area, had a bruise where she said that Wilson bit her, bruising from her being tied up trying to get away, bruising on her legs that she thinks came from when she was pushed into the boat. She had face bruising to both eyes where she said that Wilson punched her in the face and hit her with her phone several times while in the bathroom. And it ends with that she didn't contact law enforcement because she loves Wilson, and other than these incidents, he's a good guy. The victim stated that she does not wish to see Wilson again. Last sentence is sad because I feel like that happens a lot in domestic violence situations. Not shockingly, sadly, Melissa ended up dropping the charges against him, and she's quoted saying he blamed it on drugs and alcohol, and he did mention that he needed to be back on his lithium, that he was bipolar. I always give second chances.
And Ann Wade Wilson has an extensive criminal history. Record shows since 2010, he's been arrested more than 20 times throughout the state of Florida with charges like burglary and trespassing, also fraud and assault. He's even spent time here in the Palm Beach County Jail.
He called me the day he got out of jail recently.
Kelly Matthews last spoke to Wade Wilson in August of this year after he was arrested in July for sexual battery and abuse towards another girlfriend at the time. Those charges were later dropped after Wilson spent a month in jail. Earlier this week, investigators arrested the 25-year-old yet again in Southwest Florida, this time for burglary and battery. Matthews says she isn't surprised.
He was arrested for robbing me in December. He robbed me and took off with a friend of mine to Texas. So they went after him for that, and he got probation.
Then 2 months later, she says things got much worse. She claims he kidnapped her, took her to the Keys, and sexually assaulted her.
I thought he was going to kill me that night.
Matthew says she's been in contact with Wilson's dad since learning that he could have a connection to two homicides in Cape Coral. Friday, Cape Coral police named him a person of interest in the disappearance and death of Diane Ruiz and Christine Melton.
Melissa later spoke to the media and she said, I describe him as two different people. I see him as one way, kind, caring, funny, compassionate, and then the monster. So on to the murders. So on the night of Sunday, October 6, 2019, so this is a few months after all that happened with Melissa, Wade met Christine at a live music venue called Buddha Bar, and Christine was with her friend Stephanie that we mentioned earlier. So Stephanie said there was live music that night and they went because they wanted to see the band play. She said that Wade jumped out at them as they walked to the upstairs bar, and she said that he was friendly, charming, and he told the women that his name was JR. At this point, he didn't have any of these facial tattoos. We think that he got them in prison.
Yeah. And like, just to interject quickly, like, he is a good looking guy. I've seen some photos of him prior to all of this. And he, like, if he was, you know, I don't know what the word is. But before this, he was a good looking guy. Like, you know, he's attractive enough. Like, he seems like he would probably have been charismatic and charming. Like, now if you saw him, you'd be like, what is going on with, you know, the swastika on your face and all that. But this, at this time when he met the women, he seems
like...
He looked generally average. Yeah. It's understandable that they would have been okay chatting with him and, you know, hanging out with him. He seems like he would have been able to pull that off.
Yeah, like if he had a swastika tattooed on his face, then maybe they would have been more apprehensive about hanging out with him. Stephanie said that they were doing lines of coke and drinking, and she didn't think anything suspicious of it. She said that everybody was cheerful, intoxicated, there was nothing scary. So the group met another man at the bar named Jason Shepard. And when the bar closed, the four of them went back to Jason's house for a few hours. And Jason had also only met Wade that night, but described him as cool. So while they were at Jason's, Christine and Wade had a consensual sexual encounter. And after that, Christine, Stephanie, and Wade went back to Christine's in an Uber. Wade inadvertently left his cell phone at Jason's, and they hung out, so it'd be Stephanie, Christine, and Wade, until Stephanie had to leave to go to work. She hugged Christine and said, see you tomorrow, and left her with Wade. Throughout the day, Stephanie tried texting Christine but never heard back from her, but it wasn't really like a red flag to her because Christine wasn't scheduled to work that day, so she figured she could have just been sleeping. But later that day, Cape Coral police called Stephanie and told her that Christine was dead, and Stephanie said it was devastating. So we now know that Wade ended up strangling Christine to death, stole her car, and left her body there at the house. A witness named Josh Luckich said that Wade ran into his business a few hours after the murder. Wade was covered in blood and missing a few teeth. Wade backed the vehicle up to the business and asked Josh to help him, quote, get a bus ticket, plane ticket, or something to leave town. Josh said that Wade was frantic, pacing around and kind of manic, and that he continued to talk crazy. And he did tell Josh that he had killed someone.
So Diane encountered Wade on that same day, which was October 7th, 2019. She was walking to work at the bar when Wade drove past in Christine's vehicle and stopped and asked for directions. Diane, I guess, one fateful decision, got into the car with Wade. According to the news press, Wade lured her into there, and when she tried to leave, he beat and strangled her before pushing her out of the car and running over her 10 to 20 times. Wade has said that he, quote, ran over her until she looked like spaghetti.
So horrible.
Yeah. I just think, gosh, it's so always mind-blowing that just one little decision, maybe he's like, oh, can you just show me where it is? And she's like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, you seem normal enough. Like, one decision just and her life is over. It's horrible.
Yeah, in such a violent, horrible, disgusting way.
And just on your walking to work, like, it's
like surreal.
Wade would dump her body in a field behind a Sam's Club, and he would dump her purse near a Cape Coral school. Diane's body would be found days later on October 10, 2019. And when she was found, her nose was broken and her neck was fractured. So police would later say that when they went to Christine's house, she was found tied and wrapped up. Her skin had turned blue and she had broken fingernails. So I have read too that Wade said he strangled Christine in her sleep, but I'm guessing she didn't die before she woke up and tried to fight back, and that's why he was missing teeth and why she had broken fingernails. Or maybe he's lying and he strangled her while she was awake, but just to kind of point to add.
I'm glad she at least got some hits in.
So at some point during this day, and it's a little bit messy because there are a lot of court documents about this and a lot of different people who Wade encountered. So what we've deduced anyway is at some point during this day, Wade went to the home of the ex Melissa, who we mentioned earlier, the one from the court documents in the boat. Melissa said that Wade stole her $80,000 car, but she also said that she gave him the keys to it. She said that before Wade left, he insisted that she stop by, quote, a stranger's home. He said this to her at least three times and she declined each time. Melissa said that his eyes that day were black holes. She said there was nothing behind those eyes. Melissa spoke about how Wade beat her again that day. She said, then he goes to the rear back to punch me. He gets a really good punch in and then the blood splatters everywhere. I think it even surprised me how much blood came out of me and it gave me seconds to run down the stairs. So basically he assaulted her. Melissa went on to say, it's 8:45 in the morning and I didn't even get to call my son and wish him a happy birthday and I'm about to die on his 15th birthday. That's the only thing you think about as a mum, how you're going to leave your child and how badly this would mess him up for the rest of his life. So after this, at some point, Wade broke into another home. There's a deposition from the woman who lived there, and she said that she returned from a yoga class and noticed that the gate at the house was closed, which wasn't typical. And then she also saw that there was a car that she didn't recognize on the other side of the gate. She said she remembers saying hello, but she didn't see anyone. And right before unlocking the back door of the home, she paused and decided to call her eldest child to find out whose car it was. But before she made the call, she heard a man's voice. She saw Wade approach her from the garage with his hands in the air apologetically. The witness said to him, no, no, this is my house. You need to get out of here. And she described Wade as a tall man with dark hair and tattoos. She said it looked like he'd had a rough night. As Wade left in his car, she took photos of the license plate and he asked why she did that. And she said, because I don't know who the fuck you are. Now get out of here. Wade backed out, stopped for a moment, looked back and apologized before driving away. So at another point during that day, Wade broke into the home of the Amlin family. I believe, like, I've read things they're away, but then I've read other things saying they came home. But either way, while he was there, he stole food and supplies and apparently drank their White Claws. He also called his father three times during that day. At one point, he asked his dad to get him an Uber, and he told his father that he needed to leave town, and he described the murders to him. Assistant State Attorney Andreas Gardner would later explain this and said he wanted his dad to feel the excitement. So Wade's father testified in court, and he said that he called me in the afternoon, early afternoon, in a panic. The third and final time Wade called, he told his father everything about the murders. And this info about that is from winknews.com. His dad said, he said he went to some bar, met a girl, and went home with her. They hung out for a while, went to sleep, and he got on top of her and choked her until she died. He said that he stayed in the house through the night, and he took her body and rolled it up in a rug. He was going to try and put her in a car, but she was too heavy, so he left the scene. Hours later, he told his dad he was driving down the road and saw a lady walking. She asked for directions. He stopped and she got in the car. He reached over with one hand as he was driving and he choked her. His dad told investigators he thought she was dead and pulled into some woods where he was going to put the body, but when he pulled out of the car, he realized she was still alive. And Wade's father said, he said to me that he got back in the car and he ran her over like spaghetti, got out and moved her to the woods after that. So Wade's father asked him why he carried out the crimes, and Wade replied, I don't know, Dad. I don't know why I did it. I just wanted to do it. Wade's stepmother heard this entire call, and they informed police about what Wade had said, and they gave them Wade's location. So Wade had left DNA at all of the scenes. He had battery and burglary charges laid against him after he broke into Melissa's home and stole her car, and he was taken pretty quickly into custody after all of this. It's said that after he was arrested, he requested a burger and fries to eat. So this kind of goes along with his demeanor of just really not giving a shit about anything that he's done.
Yeah.
A witness named Ryan Gentile saw Wade leaving Christine's home on the day of the murders. Ryan said that the car had been driving erratically and he called the police. So from these clues, as well as the information from Wade's father, plus the DNA, police pieced together their case against Wade in relation to the murders of Christine and Diane. And around 6 weeks after the murders, Wade was charged. Wade spoke to the police and he said, I choked her out until she couldn't breathe anymore. It came across my mind to murder, just kill, kill, kill. State Attorney Amira Fox said these two women were preyed upon by the defendant and their murders impacted their families and shook our community. So Wade was indicted on two counts of first-degree murder, battery, grand theft of a motor vehicle, burglary of a dwelling, and first-degree petty theft. Soon after his arrest, Wade contacted Melissa, so that's the first girlfriend, from inside the prison. He said to her, even after this, you're still the best thing ever, you know that. Melissa said, he's very narcissistic, he's always gotten by with his looks and his charm, and he's hoping that it will work just one more time. So as we mentioned, the murders happened in 2019. He's been in prison since that date. In October 2020, while awaiting trial, Wade and his cellmate Joseph Katz tried to make a plan to escape. Their 10-foot by 10-foot cell was checked, and the only window in the unit showed signs of tampering, with the metal frame holding the window removed, and thick security glass window showed several cracks. The sheriff's office report said that Wade was the primary planner and instigator of the attempted breakout, and that Joseph could not have been ignorant of the attempt or not have taken part in it, but both men refused to make a statement to deputies. So while awaiting trial also, Wade contacted many news agencies. In 2020, he told the media that he used to be connected to a high-level human trafficking ring and that he would groom women for them. And Wade claimed the group was framing him for the murders as punishment for trying to leave. So I guess he tried to set up that story.
Okay.
In a bombshell 45-minute interview...
Hello, this is a prepaid call from...
Wilson.
An inmate at the Lee County Jail.
I spoke to Wade Wilson, the man linked to the deaths of two women in Cape Coral, Christine Melton and Diane Ruiz. And we didn't waste any time getting to the question everyone wants the answer to.
Did you commit those murders concerning Christine Melton and Diane Ruiz?
No, ma'am, I did not commit these murders, and I'm innocent.
What Wilson does admit to is seeing both of those women in the time leading up to their deaths. According to Wilson, he first met Christine Melton the night of October 6th at the Buddha Bar in Fort Myers. A police report confirms that he did go there with his now ex-girlfriend, Mila.
I did leave the Buddha with Kristen.
Wilson claims he, Christine, and her friend all went home with the man they'd met at that same bar.
I'm not sure who he was. I'm not not sure what his name is.
After spending some time there, Wilson claims he, Christine, and her friend eventually decided to head to Christine's home in Cape Coral. He claims the man they just met was going to join them at first, but backed out at the last second. He says the trio initially tried to leave in the car they'd arrived in, a Dodge Challenger Hellcat that belonged to Wade's then-girlfriend Mila, but they ran into car trouble and abandoned it somewhere on McGregor Boulevard and took an Uber to Christine's place instead. Wade says he spent the night at her home, and the next morning he asked to borrow her phone and her car so he could try to track down the car that had broken down the night before. He claims the last time he saw Christine, she was alive.
And I told her that I would be back.
Wilson says he used Christine's phone to call Mila to help him look for the car. Police records show that the two eventually met up outside of a Fort Myers spa that Mila owns. According to that report, Wilson and Mila argued. The report claims that fight ended with Wilson viciously attacking her outside of the business. He has been charged with battery in the case, but according to Wilson,
I can tell you this much, I didn't beat her, I can tell you that.
After that, Wilson says he left Mila and decided to drive back to Cape Coral to return Christine's car. While driving, he claims he drove right past Diane Ruiz and stopped to ask her for directions because he couldn't figure out where he was.
She helped me out with the directions, and she actually asked me for a ride.
He claims he drove her for about 5 minutes and then dropped her off at a bus stop, alive and well.
Does it concern you that you're one of the last people to see them alive and nobody knows what happened to them at this point?
Sure. No, I understand that. But that's not my fault. That's not my concern. That doesn't have anything to do with me. I can't give you any answer about that.
So murders happened in 2019. His trial started June 10, 2024 this year, and it ran for 5 days. So as we mentioned, since being in prison, Wade has acquired many new tattoos, including a swastika on his face. He's got like a scarecrow. I don't even know how you describe it. Like it's kind
I said
of
it was like the Joker, but with like stitches.
Yeah, maybe it's like the Joker. It's kind of like his mouth has been widened with like stitches tattooed onto it. He's got, they're not nice tattoos. Like they're, looks awful. But his attorneys were granted motions that he should be allowed to wear street clothes in court and to cover any tattoos that, quote, might be objectionable to members of the potential jury pool with makeup. It doesn't seem like he took that up, though, because in all the court photos I've seen, you can see all his tattoos. Like, there's been no effort to cover any of them up, it doesn't look like to me anyway. So Wade's defense lawyer, Lee Hollander, did not deny that Wade was guilty of the killings, but his argument was that there was no premeditation and that Wade was under the influence of drugs at the time. He also said that Wade should be convicted of a lesser charge of second-degree homicide. Lee Hollander said, "We are not claiming that he didn't do it, but I suspect the drugs. I'm not arguing insanity. I'm arguing the state is claiming premeditation. I'm arguing he's whacked out of his mind for any of this." So Joshua and Stephanie both testified on day one. Joshua is the one who Wade ran into his business and asked him to help leave town, and Stephanie was the friend with Christine, just as a reminder. Joshua told the court that Wade said he had killed people and that he needed to leave town. And Stephanie spoke about meeting Wade at the bar with Christine. Stephanie also said that everything seemed fine when she left Christine and, quote, "Christine would never have let me leave the house if she was scared." On that day, medical examiner Dr. Hernandez also testified about Christine's cause of death, which was asphyxia due to compression of her neck. On day two, Wade's father spoke about the calls he received after Wade had carried out the murders. His father is Stephen Testaseca, and he spoke to the court about how Wade had been adopted out as a baby because both he and Wade's mothers were teenagers at the time and weren't able to care for him. He told the court that they had only sporadic contact after they reconnected when Wade turned 18. Stephen said that when Wade called him, he said, "I'm a killer." But Stephen said that Wade was a good storyteller and he didn't believe him at first. But after Wade kept calling back, Stephen finally realized he was telling the truth. So this was a pretty quick trial. Both sides rested on day two and the closing arguments were set for day three. On day three, the prosecution closed by saying that the murders were premeditated and were planned by Wade. And again, the defense reiterated that they thought Wade was just whacked out of his mind. That's their quote. The jury left and deliberated for 2 hours. They returned and found Wade guilty of all charges. The first-degree murder of Christine, that he was guilty. Guilty of grand theft of a motor vehicle, which was Christine's vehicle. Battery of Melissa. First-degree murder of Diane. burglary of a dwelling, which was the Amlin home, and first degree petty theft, which was the Amlin home, which is the one where he broke in and stole the food and the White Claws.
The White Claws.
Yeah, what a random thing. He just really kept going, didn't he? So on day four, Wade spoke twice in court. He confirmed to the judge that he wouldn't testify, and he also replied, "No, I'm good," when he asked if he wanted more time to speak with his attorneys. So the proceedings on this day were held to determine what Wade's sentence would be. Wade's team called experts to speak. The first defense expert, which was forensic neuropsychologist Dr. Hyman Eisenstein, said that Wade suffered from neurocognitive brain impairment that was likely caused by sports injuries and vehicle wrecks from his early adulthood. The expert said that the trauma compromised Wade's executive functioning skills, and hindered his ability to function like a normal, healthy individual, and that also his substance abuse exacerbated the negative effects of that. The second defense expert was forensic psychiatrist Dr. Mark Mills, and he said that Wade suffered from some kind of psychotic disorder, which seems very vague for a forensic psychiatrist.
Yeah, I thought that too when I first read the notes. I was like, yeah. Oh, okay, thank you.
He said that Wade's test, though, delivered invalid results because he exaggerated symptoms. Dr. Mills said that he was unable to fully diagnose Wade because one of the interviews was cut short by him based on the belief that correction staff were spying on him. Dr. Mills said that in his opinion, Wade was suffering from paranoid delusions that could point to schizoaffective disorder, but he said that Wade showed no signs of delusions or hallucinations while talking to the experts. So the state's rebuttal expert, forensic psychologist Dr. Michael Herkov, said he did not believe there was enough evidence to support a diagnosis of a psychotic disorder, and he said that thoroughly documented and self-reported drug abuse was more likely an explanation for Wade's conduct. So the following day, the jury deliberated for around 90 minutes before reaching their decision, and they decided that Wade deserved death for the murders of Christine. They voted that 9-3 and a vote of 10-2 for Diane. The jury found that the state proved these aggravators beyond a reasonable doubt. They said that it was proven that Wade was convicted of a felony and was on probation during the murders. He committed two murders at once. The offence was heinous, atrocious, and cruel, and the offence was cold, calculated, and premeditated. So there was a new law allowing the death penalty for recommendation of 8-4 jurors that was passed in 2023. Prior to that, though, a death sentence could only be given if there was a unanimous vote amongst the jurors. So the jury have recommended the death penalty. He hasn't been formally sentenced to that yet, but his formal sentencing will happen on July 23rd. So in the next three-ish weeks, his confirmed sentence will be made public.
Yeah, it's, I think that he like definitely has mental illness clearly in some capacity, but especially with drug use, and seems like they were maybe drinking a lot according to what Melissa said.
Yeah.
But he still knew what he did was wrong, because he went to that guy in a panic saying he had to leave the country, like called his dad. So it's not like he was totally delusional when this happened. He was aware enough. And it seems like he was able to turn it on and off to some extent and presented normal some of the times, which sure he could be. I think Melissa said he needed to take lithium, which could be medication for bipolar disorder, I think. So maybe it was untreated, but still it would be negligent of him knowing he has that and having been on medication before to just stop taking it. So I feel like regardless, it's still his fault.
Yeah. I have also read that while he's been in jail, he has been basically given drugs charges. It says a canine was conducting a free air sniff around the jail. They found two bags containing suspected narcotics. They tested positive for methamphetamine. A source told authorities that drugs were brought in by an inmate trustee. A trustee is an inmate who is considered reliable and trustworthy. The trustee gave the drugs to another trustee who gave them to Wade. Wade talked about narcotics during a recorded phone call, and that basically he's been given drug-related charges based on this. So he's not a, exemplary inmate either.
Yeah, I mean, just even if you're doing drugs a lot, you don't even, like, they mess you up for extended periods. Like, it doesn't have to be like you're actively doing them. It still messes with your judgment and all that overall, depending what you're doing. And his, we talked a little bit about how people were interested in his courtroom demeanor. I feel like he hasn't really done anything crazy that I've seen besides maybe just looking generally unbothered or smug. Maybe pleased. Yeah, smug.
Yeah. They said basically he would smirk and like he hasn't done anything wild, not like Taylor Shebusiness who tried to strangle the attorney and things like that. But
beat someone up.
He's just generally unbothered despite the heinous nature of his crimes. You know, we mentioned that he asked for the burger and fries.
He just looks mildly amused.
Yeah. He ran over the woman until she looked like spaghetti, and then he's just sitting in court just, you know, generally unbothered.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing to say. I think he also gets a lot of attention in the media, because you said the Deadpool thing, so they're able to sensationalize it, and because his tattoos, like you see that, no offense to anyone with tattoos on your face, because I'm sure there's many that are fine, but his knowing the circumstances and then seeing he has like these Joker-esque tattoos and swastikas on his face, you're like, whoa, like this guy's really bad, really crazy, like what's going on here?
There is some information about the death penalty and, I guess, executions in Florida. In 2023, the number of criminals executed rose to 24, which was up from 18 in 2022. So, like, I feel like in a lot of cases, a lot of states, executions from the death penalty are declining because it's, you know, obviously a process. But in Florida, they do seem to be ramping it up slightly.
I think it's interesting he's getting it. Not that, like, what he did isn't incredibly horrible and disgusting, but I don't know. People who have done worse don't get it, but I guess it depends. Not worse, but like, you know, just as bad or just as horrible things. But I guess it depends what state you live in, because I guess it's not an option in a lot of states now. Like the only other recent one I could think of is like Chad Debo, where that was like a different level, I feel like, you know.
And even when in the last episode we talked about the Cheshire murders, so they also both did get the death penalty, but they were commuted to life in prison after the death penalty was abolished in that state.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it sounds shitty. What he did is disgusting and awful, and I'm sure most of it just kind of depends on where you live and the laws there.
And I also feel like maybe too his lack of remorse.
Yeah, like the smugness.
Yeah, when they say that the offense was cold, calculated, and premeditated, like that, obviously his lack of remorse would have.
And that he's still being like a general dickhead in prison and stuff.
Rather than, you know, he could have apologized and he'd be like, I'm really sorry. I, you know, wasn't in my right mind, but he didn't do any of that. He just is like, whatever.
That's a good point. Yeah, they're like, fuck you. But I guess that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to let you know once he's sentenced in the next few weeks or if there's any other updates. He seems like he's going to be a general pest anyway in prison, so no doubt we will probably hear about him again and his antics, but in the next few weeks he will get his formal sentence handed down.
Yep, so make sure you're following us on Instagram because that is where we will post any updates, the quickest anyways. That's True Crime Society on Instagram. And we've had like tons of new followers recently, not to just like totally change the subject, but it's been crazy because we had one post go viral-ish by comparison to our other posts. It's the one where it is a really horrible one, so I can understand, but the woman who just randomly attacked a mother and her young son at a Target, I think, and
Giant Eagle, is that what it is?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was some just in like Ohio. A supermarket type place.
Yeah,
but she killed the little boy.
Yeah, she stole a knife from the supermarket and was seen walking around the supermarket before she went out and confronted the mother while the mother was loading the groceries and the child into the car and the little boy died. The mother survived.
Yeah, so this post, just because of how like shocking and horrible and scary it is, whenever something's so random like that, it's so scary, it's just like really going around.
It must have been shared somewhere. I still haven't been able to figure out where, but we've had literally like 10,000 new people follow us, I think.
So
crazy.
It's interesting. I think it's like getting pushed in the algorithm because of how horrible the crime is, so people are more likely to comment on it and being like, wow, this is horrible, disgusting, so the algorithm just sees the activity. Back to my usual whatever. There'll be a blog on this case at truecrimesocietyblog.com, so you can check that out, and you should check us out on Patreon as well, because we do all the episodes ad free plus we do a weekly bonus episode every week and early release of the regular episodes. I try to release them a day earlier for the most part. So that's cool stuff there. That's it. Share the podcast to your Instagram stories if you can. It's a big help to us to get the word out, and leave us any nice comments, good reviews, ratings, follow, subscribe. Make sure you're still subscribed, Apple Podcast people, because like we said, it just shuts off your automatic downloads, unsubscribes you, all that. So if you can stay subscribed, it's a big help to us when you guys do things like that. The fireworks are starting to go off, so.
Oh, that was good timing.
Yeah. Stay safe out there, everyone. Thanks for listening. Peace out.
See ya.